You're listening to a Connecting Teach Central podcast. I'm Susan Everhart. Our topic today is learning styles and teaching styles. Joining me is behavior management specialist, Dr. Tom McIntyre. Tom, thanks for joining us once again.
Good day, Susan, and thanks for inviting me once again. Just to bring folks up to speed, when we're talking about learning styles, we're talking about some relatively stable indicators of how people perceive information, interact with it, respond to the learning environment. They're the way our mental functioning happens, the way we deal with new information, how we prefer to approach a learning task and absorb information and show the information that we've gathered. Essentially, it's the way we think, the way we perceive, interpret, imagine, plan, problem solve, reason, classify, synthesize, transform, appraise, criticize, remember. Let me take a breath there. And it varies from person to person, but we do see similarities among those from the same cultural group. And anytime we talk about culture, we're walking on ethnic eggshells, and it's important we talk about certain cautions. For example, don't stereotype. But there are some traits that are seen more commonly in some groups than in other groups, as long as we remember that within that culture, there are individuals with different degrees of these traditional styles that we'll talk about. Some folks in a particular culture won't show the traditional ways at all, and others are drenched in them. And there are many influences, but we believe that culture is the biggest influence on someone's preferred way of taking in information about the world, making sense of it, and then showing what they know.
When you talk about culture, are you talking about nationalities, regionalism, race issues? What are we talking about?
You know, we don't have a good term to describe exactly what we mean. We say culture, but yes, what exactly is involved in that? And we all have different influences, gender, disability, area of natural origin, socioeconomic class, the things that happen to us in our lives, the things we're exposed to. But we do see among certain groups, if we get below surface culture, the food and the way people dress, and we even get below the behavioral actions of particular groups, we get into very deep culture, which few people have studied and few people know about. And learning styles is one of these deep cultural traits. Going beyond the sensory input channels that we often talk about, or the amount of structure or flexibility that kids desire. Some of our kids will say, do I have to do it this way? They're very creative. They want a lot of flexibility. Other kids want structure. I can't do this. Tell me what you want me to do with this. Or impulsivity versus how reflective one is. Being quick and intuitive is important for good social skills. If we hesitate, the interaction will be disjointed and uncomfortable. You better be quick and intuitive when a car is coming at you. Other times, the reflective thinking style is best for working out math formulas, for doing your best on an untimed test. But we do see some cultural differences in learning style. And just for example, what we're talking about, people of European heritage tend to be what are known as field independent. Learning is uninfluenced by the group. I am on my own with the task, with this information. Where most other folks around the world are field sensitive, the importance of the group, what are their opinions of what I say? I prefer to learn in a group situation versus doing it at my desk by myself. Another way of looking at learning styles and cultural aspects of it is, are you an inductive thinker and a sequential thinker? You'd prefer to learn the parts in isolation and put them together until finally we get the aha moment, I understand the whole. That tends to be fairly typical of folks of a European heritage, more common among people of European heritage than other groups, where other groups more commonly have a global, deductive, simultaneous way of learning. Tell me the big picture first. And then we can look at the parts that prove that big picture. But I want to know where we're going initially. When I was learning to swim and my parents sent me off for 3 hours of swim instruction, 3 one-hour sessions, I guess they wanted some inexpensive babysitting, Coach Calandrelli taught me how to swim in a sequential, inductive way, following the directions. First of all, you stand in chest-deep water, and you hold your breath, and you place your face in the water. And then you place your face in the water, and you blow bubbles. Once you're skilled at that, you push off from the wall and you glide while you're blowing bubbles. Then you glide while kicking your feet and blowing bubbles. And then you glide while kicking your feet while blowing bubbles and you raise your head to catch a breath. And then you learn to swing your arms and take a breath. And eventually you push off the wall and you swim. But you learn swimming in parts. And finally you get to the whole. You understand it. And I was rewarded with a red polywog button, an item instead of social group kind of reward, where many of my friends, they were taught to swim by, you walk out to the end of the dock, your older brother pushes you in, and you figure it out. You do the whole immediately, and then to improve your swimming, you would work on the various parts. And what was the reward for them? Congratulations, I guess survival, but congratulations and the approval of others. So some differences in preferred ways of learning and showing one's knowledge.
Do you think that the structure of our schools is a result of European field independence kind of learning, or do you think that the way our schools are structured is perpetuating this kind of learning style?
Well, I think certainly we are in a time of transition. We are finding out more about learning styles. But given that over 90% of teachers have European heritage, originally our schools were set up by folks of European heritage to teach boys and then girls of European heritage, and there's just sort of this continuation of what makes sense for us, but oftentimes doesn't make sense for some of the newer arrivals. And
because,
so, for example, I was taught to teach by... My teaching guidelines are I want to present this material step by step. I use a lot of verbalness in the giving of verbal directions, and I teach it step by step, and then we rehearse those steps. And I know whether my lesson plan is a good one by I look at it and I say, okay, am I proceeding step by step? Do I move from the parts to a final understanding of the whole? Are we big into analysis? Is there a lot of verbal, auditory procedures involved? Is the order that I present information important, sequential, step by step? And do I handle each item individually in the whole? And that's a good lesson plan according to the way that I was originally taught to teach.
How do you teach now?
Well, I try to analyze exactly what that youngster's learning style is, and then I try to teach to it while also helping all kids become chameleons, become proficient at different ways of learning, because they will be exposed to many different ways. The information on the world will come to them in many different ways as they go through life. For example, we know now from research that every group of youngsters does better through cooperative learning practices. And we can find a lot of this online and in books. And on Behavior Advisor website, we've got a page on how to set up cooperative learning practices. Every group does better except for white boys who do just as well. So nobody's penalized by cooperative learning practices, and most people do better.
If you have a group of students and they all have an assortment of preferred learning styles in a cooperative setting, would you mix those learning styles up or would you try to keep them together?
Well, I think there is some individual instruction in the youngster's strongest channel, especially when we're initially teaching information to the youngsters. But we do want to expand their ability to adapt and function well within different learning styles. And I think perhaps as we get into the second podcast regarding learning styles and talk about some of these differences. We can mention at the end of it some of these strategies for helping kids adapt and adjust and expand their repertoire. Essentially, what I am saying is that oftentimes teachers are taught to teach in a way that makes a lot of sense for certain groups of kids, especially those with a European heritage, although it certainly includes many others who are flexible in their learning style, maybe are proficient in two or three different ones. But there are many kids who are not yet able to benefit from a rational, reason-bound, removed, data-based, non-emotional, task-oriented, individual work kind of way. There are some kids who are more intuitive, more emotional, more people-oriented. They want to interact and cooperate with others to learn, a style known as being field-sensitive.
Let's pursue that difference between field independence and field sensitivity in our next podcast, where we talk about learning styles and adjusting and adapting to learners in your classroom.
Yes, Susan, I'd be glad to pursue that with you.